This is Red Ice Radio. From the apparent to the esoteric. RedIceCreations.com.
Welcome back to Red Ice Radio. If you are joining us for the first time, this is the channel where we bring you what we consider to be the most fascinating and important topics. Keep your browser tuned to RedIceCreations.com to follow us on a regular basis. My name is Henrik Palmgren and we are coming to you from Sweden in Scandinavia. Alex Putney returns today to discuss the latest developments, news and the continuation of his work and research that is presented on his website humanresonance.org. We've had Alex with us two times before, and if you are new to his work, we encourage you to go into our archive and follow along in the story from the beginning. But a very brief synopsis of Alex's theory would be that we are moving towards a higher planetary resonance. The growing awareness brings people together in alignment at convergence points of infrasound standing waves. Ancient sacred sites are calling attuned healers into resonance. And many of the anomalies that Alex tracks and details from around the world on his website is an effect of this higher resonance and these standing waves. It's good to talk to you once again, Alex, joining us now from La Mana in Ecuador. Humanresonance.org is your website, and obviously you've been tracking and monitoring new anomalies arising as a side effect of the standing waves, as we've discussed on previous programs with you, Alex. And I'd like to run through and talk about some of the latest news, of course. But first of all, welcome back, Alex. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderfully, thanks. It's great to be back with you. And I've been able to update my website with so many more stories. It's become a barrage of new information flowing through that I think is directly related to this solar activity. So this news is pretty relevant to where we're going as far as 2012 is concerned.
How do you filter some of this stuff? There's just so much out there. There's so many anomalies. Is it a filtering process for you at this point where you basically cannot track and monitor and, I guess, analyze the things that are coming in? Or to you, Alex, is it very specific and you kind of know exactly what you're looking for, I guess?
Well, I've definitely had to narrow down the range of things that I want to talk about. And there's a lot of stories that slip through the cracks where I don't have the time or energy to focus on them. But there are several that are just right. I mean, what I look for more or less is multiple factors that indicate that this could not be from some other source. So obviously there are lots of unexplained fires that happened, and I don't include all of those. That would be a horrendous amount of work. But I wait for those and I pick those, and now they're coming every few days, where you have events like an explosive sound happening, a power outage happening in an area, and then immediately afterwards, fires igniting in electrical equipment in the area. See, that is definitely an unusual situation that cannot be explained, and all these articles pick up on that when those details are provided. So there's definitely eyewitness testimony of these events, and that's pretty much what indicates whether or not I can draw enough information to really make my case. So there's a lot of fires that occur in abandoned buildings right now, which I know are related to this phenomenon, and yet I'm not really able to post all of those.
Absolutely. One story that I picked up on, as did you, Alex, is the kind of the strange explosions or whatever they were in Fort Worth in Texas. I think that the official story behind this was that it was some kind of power failure, although we could not hear a single sound as far as I'm concerned, unless there was a different audio on the video, and you've linked that video up too. So obviously that's one thing people can do, go and check out that video. PC electric explosions, you call it, in Fort Worth, Texas. What's your take on this one, Alex?
Well, it's an amazing event that I think is linked with some of the anomalous radar data that people have been turning up, that have been reposting on the internet and focusing on. And in fact, in years past, there have been radar rings and things that people are calling harp rings. And there's a YouTube videographer Dutch Sins, who's all over those, and he's provided some warnings using that data that I find pretty relevant. He's basically shown that there are certain hotspots around the U.S. and that these hotspots tend to have water vapor rising up atmospherically, and they're standing fog areas, let's say. And it seems that this, you know, you can see in the images that thicker cloud cover is rolling through in the high atmosphere very quickly, but these hotspots are not changing. And I've been, you know, identifying this and mentioning it on my website on several different articles. And definitely Fort Worth falls into that category of sites that's right at the epicenter of one of these energy circles. And it keeps flaring up. And I was expecting this to happen, you know, over the last 6 months. I've been seeing it on the radar constantly. It's also in connection with NEXRAD radar stations, which are located in the epicenters of these concentric circular patterns that are forming. So the distribution, though, really shows us that the pyramids are creating a natural energy or augmenting a natural energy field around the planet and focusing that sound into these hotspots, because these hotspots are in lines, these NEXRAD towers at the centers of them, creating lines that actually point towards the pyramid in Egypt on the other side of the planet. So both, I think what we're talking about is a phenomenon here where ancient people were building sacred sites in these areas to use these energies, and government NEXRAD weather stations have been built in them specifically for weather manipulation in a harp-like scenario, as there is an array of several dozen, you know, likely over 100 of them across the continental U.S.
So do you think we're talking about a mix in this case here? If we look at the footage from Fort Worth, it's like a laser show when you have multiple of these going off in different places at the same time, and you have a different color ratio. It looks spectacular, like they're testing out some new laser show gear almost, Alex.
Well, the interesting thing is, too, you'll notice that the power, just as I described in many of these fires, the piezoelectric fires that I'm mentioning, the power goes out and then huge electrical surges flow through the area. And that's exactly what we see in this video. You'll notice that when those surges flow, obviously it's totally black in the areas that are powered by those stations. So that is another very clear clue that that electrical energy is coming from an outside source, and that it has to be an acoustic source. And that's further observed in the standing waves that form, that arc across whole city blocks from one station to another station. So those huge arcing events are basically the plasmas riding on massive standing waves that are basically the two power stations are resonating with each other, and there creates a pathway, a wave path that those plasmas jump across, which are basically the electrons creating a standing wave lightning bolt from one location to the other. And the interesting thing that I can really mathematically connect to the theory that I'm presenting with the infrasound standing wave structures globally mapped throughout my website, is that this Fort Worth, Texas location is exactly at 28.0% of the Earth's circumference distance from the Great Pyramid of Egypt. So that whole number percent suggests very clearly that the acoustics, there are wavelengths of 1/100th of the Earth's circumference, and that those wavelengths of about 249 feet are jumping and focusing at every whole percent distance along its path from the pyramid. So it's an amazing opportunity that we have.
So in other words, this logically would also be showing up somewhere else, but it's not that it would show up at the same time, right? This is you get the node points happening at maybe at different times depending on where the focus of the energy is or the nature, I guess, of the standing wave. But do you think that we could see this very, very similar phenomena, but in a different region, maybe in the States or maybe on another continent altogether, Alex?
Definitely. And I think during the solar maximum, every 11 years, this occurs, and the next one is the one that the Mayans have predicted major events will occur with. And I think it's inevitable, and this is the opinion not only of myself, but many solar scientists and UFO contactees who've been told about the future and we've discussed previously, that these events are tied to an invisible partner in our solar system that's a binary twin of our sun. So I think that is the underlying force that really no one's talking about here. And that, the proximity of that, is influencing our sun, which I believe at some critical juncture will transfer a lot of its energy to that dark star and reignite its surface. So we've talked about that in detail in relationship with the supernova event of Betelgeuse, which is definitely happening sometime in the near future. We have yet to get accurate computer models to show us when, and my belief is that we're not getting that information, which should be easily producible because, you know, it is lining with the 2012 event. So December 22nd. So there's definitely a lot of forces involved, and that's why we have different hotspots activating depending on where the pyramid is and where the solar flare is facing when it's activated.
That's right, and we had another one, of course, in Texas before as well, the aerial plumes or plasma plumes in Longview. I know that Texas has... what is that called again? I'm forgetting it right now. It's an area where you have a lot of interesting kind of discharge plasma ball lightning phenomena. Maybe you know the location, Alex, I'm thinking about. Let's see here.
No, not specifically. Although Longview was a very, I couldn't connect it, at least in my research, with any previous history of events in that area. And I do have information on the owner of the game trail camera, the hunter, probably a farmer as well, who lives in that area. So I would definitely be trying to get in touch with him in the near future now that I'm settled in Ecuador and can communicate again really easily from here. So he's an interesting source for possibly more information because, you know, presumably that game trail camera would be still placed right there considering he was so impressed with the footage that it obtained.
Interesting. I was thinking about the Marfa lights in Marfa. That's another one, obviously, where it's believed that some kind of, you know, electricity static buildup or discharge is happening. There's a number of these hot spots around the planet as well, including, of course, the lights in the Carolinas as well at the Brown Mountain. And these seems to be, obviously, we might be looking at a situation where these are increasing now as well during these times. But in any regard, they seem to be kind of going all the time, Alex, no matter what is happening around us or if it is a increase in solar activity or not.
Yeah, I definitely think it has to be related. And in my own personal experience, I've had several events of flashes of light that were so bright that I've had the room around me light up with them. And it could not have been unrelated to what I was experiencing at the time in my consciousness, because I was making major breakthroughs. And I write about that in my Tesla's Rebirth book in detail. And the second chapter really begins with comparing those flashes of light that I see in the room sometimes with the flashes that are seen on the sun and with flashes that astronauts have actually been recorded talking about. And there's been downlinked footage by Martin Stubbs, who produced the secret transmissions video with Graham Birdsall, both of whom are now deceased under mysterious circumstances. And these images are breathtaking, and they show these same flashes of plasma that I have in my personal experience and that we're witnessing on game trail cameras, on dash cams of police cars. We're seeing all kinds of things because we have all this data now flowing through. So I'm really fascinated to be able to communicate about these things, because obviously I would sound crazy without having written my books. I certainly did sound crazy. And at this point, at least I've described in detail and drawn as many other sources that are available to, you know, really corroborate my experience and compare it with others like Tesla, who themselves described flames and flickering flashes of light around them.
Absolutely. Martin Stubbs, YouTube, make a search there. Check out those videos for you guys who haven't seen that already. It's pretty amazing stuff, actually, in terms of the tether event and all that as well. It's very interesting seeing the interaction, I guess, between these objects / light forms / plasma lights, whatever they are, Alex, with some of the Earth bound machinery that is up there. Very interesting footage.
Yeah, I've been able to spend hours looking at it, and I'm totally fascinated. And to me, it was one of the really grounding things that allowed me to say, hey, I can look at footage of the surface of the sun, and I can look at footage from astronauts in space that show things happening like I see around me. And I, you know, I've drawn on the experience of people historically like Tesla, who have described the same things, to, you know, accept them for myself, bring them into my life, and see them as something that will allow me to connect to people and show them a higher reality, rather than something that I can't talk about with others and makes me feel like, you know, something is very strange in this universe, which it's a very curious and interesting universe, but I think very beautiful.
Absolutely. Let's move on and talk a little bit about the Mandala Formation in Westwoods, England. When did this one show up, Alex?
I'm not sure I have the date right before me. But I think it was about 3.5 weeks ago. I'll have to look it up again. But a stunning one that for me connected right back to work that I had started in 2006 and presented on my website, I think in as early as 2007. It's at the bottom of the homepage from my website, humanresonance.org. And I had put together a spherical rendering of standing wave patterns based on the two-dimensional images provided by quantum physicist Arkadiusz Jajic. And his work really connected with a lot of other things that I was studying in psychoacoustics and drove me to produce these maps that were three-dimensional renderings that immediately came to mind when I saw that crop circle. And so I had to compare them on the webpage that I presented for that. And there's actually a follow-up crop circle a week later that I have on the site as well, that also presents that same geometry in a more complex rendering. Very beautiful.
Very, very nice. It's a classic Celtic cross. I immediately were thinking about the Cathar cross with a 8-pointed node when I saw it. And as you pointed out earlier, Alex, it's obviously a symbol that comes up everywhere in the majority of you know, esoteric doctrines and religions around the world. Basically, it's an ancient symbol, that specific balanced cross. Is there anything else we can say about that, or why that specific pattern would show up in the nature it is? Do you think we're talking about communication here, or do you think that we're talking about a natural nature / electrical magnetic resonance symbol that has just have kind of transplanted itself onto the Earth? What's your take on that?
Well, I definitely think it's a communication from higher dimensions or densities of our reality. And it's been well, discussed that it's plasma orbs or plasma balls of lightning floating around and, have been videotaped on occasions, although many people are uncomfortable with admitting those are real documents. But it's happened so many times, and obviously the photography that we've produced, even myself at the Sacred Springs here on the property that we're developing right now in La Mana, these orbs continue to appear. And in all the photographs, well, not all, but let's say all the photographs where all the conditions are right, they always come back to us. And we're still trying to define what those conditions are, but certainly human curiosity and wonder is one of the things that they're engaging with their appearance in photography as well as in crop circles. So I definitely think it's a message that is telling us to try to make a connection between the sacred sites that these form near, for example, Silbury Hill, Avebury Circle, Stonehenge, and to look at the connections and the geometries that they're presenting globally with the axes of the Great Pyramid. If you look at the Great Pyramid in Egypt from above, it has an axis symmetric pattern in eight directions presents a symmetry around the planet that we find, and I've been able to document on my website in hundreds of cases, literally, an alignment with the geopositions of temples globally. So in the case of the Westwoods crop circle and all these other circles happening in Wiltshire, we find that they tend to be on the resonant band, if you will, of infrasound that's being emitted by the pyramids that's at 9.0% of the Earth's circumference from the Great Pyramid in Egypt. So that is also, like we mentioned in the case of Fort Worth, Texas, it was at 28.0%. These sacred sites and these ancient temples and crop circle locations in southern England are also at 9.0%. So I think that is really the message that these crop circle designers are giving us, and that I feel I have a really, really big piece of the puzzle to map these phenomena globally. And I've applied this mapping to literally hundreds of events. And the probability that I'm wrong at this point has been narrowed to, you know, a completely insignificant amount. And I would have to say that if you look, you know, I've been working for many, many years on this and producing information on my website and books. And if you looked, you'd have to say pretty much on the internet that you are the only other source of information about my work, or someone who's promoting my work. And in fact, publishers, there are certainly other web talk show hosts who would like to speak with me and help me get my information out there. And I appreciate that. So it's very interesting, and I think there's definitely a media blackout on some of the work that I've been focusing on. And you have people like Project Camelot, people like David Wilcock and Richard Hoagland, and all these people getting together. You have Michael Adams working with Alex Jones from Prison Planet. All these connections that are being made, they're, I think, revealing something about the industry that's at work here when those connections cannot happen with information like that, which I'm providing. So there's certain topics that are okay, and certain ones that are not, and that margin is always changing. So it's a very interesting time to see who's talking. For example, saying that extraterrestrials will save the day, that no radiation will happen, that, you know, all of this new age crap is obviously falling apart now.
Well, it's true to one extent. Obviously, it's very. Certain things are very touchy. We've talked about with other guests about this too, and I just, from my point of view, I don't understand it. It's just I bring on guests that I find interesting, and obviously we'll love when things collide and when things are you know, antithetical to each other's. That makes people think, and you know, so we can examine whatever is happening in the world from multiple different angles. The more, if you will, the better, and because that will, you know, stir people to think for themselves and come to their own conclusions and start thinking about this stuff, and they have to kind of look into it a little bit more instead of just taking the word for this. So I don't understand it, and I love talking about your stuff, Alex, and I hope that there's no one out there who is, you know, consciously avoiding it for whatever reason. I don't see that. Hopefully we can just draw more attention to your work, because I find it really, really interesting, Alex, and just keep on doing what we're doing, and if people are interested, the word will get out, I believe. So why don't we move on a little bit, talk, oh, there was one thing I wanted to ask you about. You mentioned 9%, 28%. Is there any of these other ratios, then, you will, or percentage numbers, if you will, that you're looking for specifically, that you suspect we would see something else show up in this percentage range, if you will, Alex?
Well, definitely the whole number percents are significant locations, and throughout my website I provide examples. So on each of the pages that I analyze, each of the stories at the bottom of the page, I include the analysis, which for a lot of people they may gloss over the numbers part of it, but that's really significant for me, and part of what I need to wake people up about is that sacred geometry relates to exactly where these hotspots are happening, and that using this map we can predict not only, you know, where areas are more likely to happen, but we can actually use this theory to have sound recording instruments that measure low frequency humming that directly can give us a warning, you know, just like for earthquake detection. Very easy, simple equipment that you can do, have a microphone in some insulation housing so that it doesn't get the higher frequencies being recorded. So there are villages where, you know, there are people running around wondering whether these fires are going to recur or not. And they don't have the information to know, because solar flares go away and they're forced to, you know, go back to the land and see what they can make of their lives. And the information that I have definitely can provide a clue to local governments who may want to use this information and set up a microphone to be able to give people warnings as to when solar flare activity could be causing fire conditions in the village because of acoustic reasons. So I certainly believe that the U.S. government and probably all the big governments of the world would completely ignore this, because this, you know, contravenes some of the work that they're doing to manipulate consciousness. But certainly local governments are very closely involved with people's real life struggles to survive these events that are happening. And a lot of people, a lot of the stories on my website, people are the situation is so misunderstood that they're not able to receive the help of the community because people are afraid the fires will continue in their house because these fires are associated with this certain property and potentially these certain people. So it's a very interesting situation. And I would love to be able to get this message out to the small communities that are suffering. And it's really beyond my reach at this point as far as how many communities are experiencing these fires. But it's a step that, if we use it collectively, can make a big difference. And I'm just, you know, pushing for the start of that.
It's almost like if we don't analyze this or understand it from a true scientific perspective, it's almost like we get a return of superstition. People think that the grounds are haunted or this is because of demons or something. We're kind of heading backwards again, Alex. But another thing I was thinking about here when you were mentioning the sound and the acoustics is was a story from early June 2011 from the Telegraph talking about that the small village in the UK was the latest victim of something they called the hum. It's a mysterious sound on the very edge of perception that has driven thousands of people around the world to distraction. And this article continues, now a tiny English village is the latest community to claim to be being hit by the phenomena known as the hum. Residents of Woodland in County Durham claim that every night a noise permeates in the air similar to the throb of a car engine. Could be another one of these, obviously, things, and because this seems to be moving. This has been reported in various cities and towns, it seems like, around the world at this point, Alex.
It definitely is, and I think it's become a phenomenon right now that is growing to such a rate that there are people out there who are realizing they have to change their lives because of it. You know, it may have started for them years ago, and they're now, you know, sufferers of the hum, as so many people claim. And they don't know what to do. And, you know, a lot of the people's names are not provided either in the Western media. So there's no way for me to help them directly either. And my hope is just to be able to post the information on my website. And it's interesting because the latest pieces of it, the latest articles that I've read, one from the SF Gate by Mark Morford, where they're literally mentioning pyramids as a possible cause of the hum, but then saying all these theories are silliness. So it's interesting because now I'm reading that people are hearing what I'm saying, and that feels good. I mean, I'm not being mentioned directly by the article, but I don't believe there's anyone else out there that's made that connection as strongly as I have. So I think a lot of the hubbub about Betelgeuse as well, I've been able to stir up the pot a little bit and get people thinking. So, you know, people are certainly out there in the media confusing ideas about Comet Elenin and Nibiru and the binary twin and all these things, and, you know, not including the Betelgeuse information in a way that would bring them together. But it's definitely stirring up the pot, and I think people are using their minds to try to figure out astronomically what's going on and psychologically and conscious-wise in their own neighborhoods, because there is definitely something afoot.
There is something afoot, and there is strangeness, you know, as ever before. And obviously, as we've been talking about before, Alex, this is on the increase for various different reasons. Can we tie in a little bit more on the sun here and the increase we've had? A lot of M-class flares going off the last, well, I think it is a couple of weeks now at the point we're talking, Alex, and today, at the time of this recording, we had an X-class flare. We have riots going on in the UK. Obviously, it's been going on for quite a bit of time now in other countries, including Greece and so forth as well. But what do you make of this? Do you think that the geomagnetic storms that are happening on the sun, that the solar radiation from the flares also is something that is affecting, you know, human emotion, anger and violence? We get a stir up in society and things literally heat up because of it. What do you think, Alex?
Definitely. And I think low frequency sound has been well studied in laboratories as causing these kinds of things. You know, people have noticed hotspots potentially. For example, in the UK, I remember a couple studies, and I'm sure they've happened in many places around the world, where there's a haunted house or some location where all kinds of paranormal, quote unquote, events happen. And they go there and they're able with instruments to record the low frequency humming that, you know, is not present in other areas as strongly as in that house. So a lot of people have tied that to that you can hear the spirits or something. But I believe, in fact, that this energy pattern is a global pattern that makes energy more available at certain spots. So if it's more available at those spots, then you imagine electromagnetic life forms that are not incarnating in physical bodies might be drawn to these locations where there's more energy. So that's one aspect of it. But definitely the mass hysteria, really, that we see around the planet is a reflection, I think, also not just of that, or at least let's say the root cause is the cosmic oscillations are strengthening in the lower frequencies. And the effect that this has basically is that some souls are really in the frequency wavelength or frequency resonance of earlier time periods. And there's a certain karmic space involved in being around here at this time because of the extremes that we're experiencing. And it's obviously for some people to see and learn from and to change their lifestyles, I believe, to live in a new way in the future. And that's why I'm sharing with people the information about colloidal gold and silver and going barefoot as a way to sustain your energy levels when food shortages may occur during these drastic times where industry fails. But a lot of these changes definitely have to do with the effect of low frequency sound. But in the body, I think too, there's the spirit itself and the toxicity of the body plays a role where people who are toxified with chemicals are actually experiencing absorption into the body, more deeper absorption, more electrical exposure. And also their spirit, on a spirit level, they're feeling less and less integrated into what's going on or in the world around them. And they feel more volatile, more like there's no reason to live, more the stress basically builds to suicidal levels. And there's lots of research that has proven that there are suicide clusters around microwave towers that are extra high intensity.
Yep.
So these definitely have been studied in the labs, and we can say that, you know, in the same way the government may be or various governments of the world may be influencing people or causing cancer in people through these ways, they're also increasing stress levels and the volatility of people. For example, passengers in airports. People who are going through areas that they're being secured in are obviously under threat of violence constantly by the people with the guns. And that stress is used against them when you have certain frequencies introduced. And I believe that's going on in airports in different parts of the world. And as well, the solar flare activity is a macrocosmic effect that's not based on microwaves, but in fact is based on extra low frequency sound, which is also used by, high tech to manipulate consciousness.
Basically, we're talking about an oscillation emanating from the central galaxy, as far as we know, but then it could be another reason behind that, if you will, Alex.
Definitely. I think it has to do with cycling waves that synchronize consciousness. And what we're seeing right now is a function of synchronization, where those who are not synchronized into the new resonance that's coming here and that's grounding in, those people are losing they're basically experiencing intense cognitive dissonance, which really makes them question the value of their own life and the value of their ability to learn lessons and be happy and have what they've wanted. And I think that's one of the biggest problems with the mental programming that's going on around the world with television, is that people are trained not to live the life they want, but to watch them passively. And that training is really what will separate those who choose to stay within that range of consciousness, and which is fading away, and those who choose to, you know, get integrated with nature and be a part of the new energy that's coming. And that really, I think that new energy is why the ancient pyramid builders never really used metals, in very few places where they wanted to use metals as electrodes. So the stone technology of the ancient past will be immediately part of our present awareness, because it'll all be turning on. So the human experience is definitely returning in a circular way to an ancient pattern that will be reestablished because of waves from our galaxy, waves that continually cycle and bring us back to this awareness.
I love that chicken in the background, by the way, Alex. So we need to ground ourselves, obviously, or synchronize ourselves with the changes that are incoming. And this draws me to an idea of the aspect that most humans today, I think, at least in the Western world, are living in a environment, house, apartment, what have you, where a lot of the materials are, if you will, artificial. They're not the real deal. We're talking about plastic and linoleum instead of wood or stone or real things. And I just wonder what kind of effect this has as well. We're constantly around plastic and metal and crap, basically, instead of the real deal, Alex.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly metals are crystalline. So they're absorbing energy in a way that will be very useful once we are using the pyramids and they're engaged again. But right now, the way they're being used is simply for their structural strength. And that's a big problem, because if you imagine those metals heating up, and you know, there are examples of, on my website, I present one story of I think it was over Sweden. I'd have to check that again to be sure. But there's an airline that had a windshield shattered because of overheating in the window heating element. And the photographs that I've got on the site shows molten metal dripping out of the superheated element. And, of course, the window totally shattered. Hmm. So that's a fascinating connection where certainly because of that molten metal, you can gauge exactly what those temperatures must have been based on which metal it is, if it was steel or copper, or, you know, you could test it. And that right there proves that in extreme cases, which will be happening soon and have been happening as I'm tracking, that even the rebar inside concrete in buildings may itself get heated to the point where it's rubbery and can even melt. So what we have, if you imagine huge sky-rise buildings where all of a sudden the metals are right. superheating,
yeah.
not only are they on fire, but they are crumbling because there's no structural integrity to those hot metals.
Could we potentially see the just complete falling together of a building in a large city somewhere, potentially then as well?
I would say to reach that level, it would have to be an event that would affect the whole area. And if it were prolonged, it would cause that in all of the buildings. Mm-hmm. Although the evidence we have is, you know, from basically if you look at the best evidence was in 1859 when a major solar flare event knocked out the telegraph lines and ignited all of the telegraph offices all over Europe and the United States. So if you imagine the level of technological advance in 1859 compared to now and the amount of metal strung everywhere, you really realize that the dangers that were present at that time have been escalated to a point that is astronomical. You can't even calculate how wrapped up in wire everything is at this point. So when I look at, you know, how I want to plan my life for the future, I'm definitely conscious of this and starting to build structures and think of in new ways, using the techniques of people like Dr. Davidovits, who has been able to demonstrate that the pyramid stones are made out of concrete.
Yeah.
So I would like to start using that here. I would like to start using bamboo with lashing, just like instead of nails and screws, just like boats were made in the Polynesian cultures. There's all kinds of new ways to build things. And certainly we're building on the ground or even in the ground because this, you know, this big ship we're on is shaking right now. And, you know, you've studied and your audience probably knows very well about all of the sinkholes and the cracks forming in the earth. I've just uploaded a story last week about, or 2 weeks ago, about the new crack forming in Santa Maria, the Huehuculco in Mexico. We've got another one forming in Chile. We've had, you know, dozens. The list is just growing astronomically. So all of these things basically amounts to a crustal slippage that's happening. And I think it's happening because of an increase in the core rotation of the planet. And there are several sources of information to look up on the web about that. But it does seem like we could be, as we spoke of before, returning to a 360-day or fewer, and that speeding up of the core is a response to the dark star that's approaching. And this planetary earthquake situation, I believe, will be extreme as it continues up until the change.
And if no change occurs in 2012, as so many people are suggesting in their denial, then we will have extreme earthquakes for a long period of time. But if the energies do change, as a lot of Native Americans and indigenous communities around the world, as well as the Mayans, are suggesting, then we're going to have mitigation of those disasters, because the throbbing low-frequency pulsation of this entire planet is definitely going to alleviate earthquake buildup. So it'll release the quake energy every second.
This is just an adjustment phase, basically, we're in right now. But that could mean then, if we look at life in a city the next year and continuing from that point, what about static electricity building up? I mean, we're very uncomfortable, obviously, riding a car, step out and touch the metal on the car and you get a discharge from that. We might be looking at a situation where there's lots of static electricity build up in the atmosphere altogether, and even, you know, metal buildings, they could just sparks everywhere, right? Very uncomfortable.
Exactly. And here's the thing. Only people who will get shocked are those who are wearing rubber shoes. If you're grounded and barefoot and you've been drinking colloidal gold and silver, then you're going to have an electrical conduit that will ground that energy through you and not give you a massive shock. So it'll be survivable if you have those kinds of conditions, if the building was struck by something on the order of a lightning bolt. But definitely what we're talking about here is a change that will require a large portion of Earth's population to reincarnate, either elsewhere or right back here. But, you know, that's just going to have to be part of it. And it's not the end of the world whatsoever, but it's the end of ways of living that are harmful, which have been harmful. We know that. And those ways will be even more harmful soon.
Can you mention something more about the NextRad towers and if you believe that the elite has placed these on significant sites, and if so, what do you think that they are primarily using them for? Studying? Are they using them to amplify their own frequencies that they are beaming out, or is there something else going on? What do you think, Alex?
Well, they have certainly a functional use of doing the weather, you know, using Doppler weather measurement radar. But what's being suggested in my work, and as well the work of Dutch Sintz and others, is to suggest that there is a secondary feature in the towers because of their elevated location. It was an easy component to add a low frequency oscillator into these things, which could be used in conjunction with the other, you know, in the whole array across the entire United States, to be able to affect something similar to what you see when you look at the HARP array, which is a bunch of power lines strung together from different stations with little, camper vans holding whatever batteries or whatever they're using. So those situations, that's creating a small array as far as, you know, being only, you know, kilometer or whatever, that's giant, but compared to setting up an array that spans the entire United States, you know, that has another use. I would say the more compact arrays, for example, there are sea-based X-band radar arrays, which are huge platforms which have spherical domes on them, which have inside emitters, like basically pointable HARP arrays, just like you'd see in Alaska at Gakona. So those, all of these systems together are being used in different ways to affect certain goals. And I think that you look at the Haiti earthquake, that one stands out, as well as the Fukushima event, those two being very strong examples. And in the case of the Fukushima event, there was plasma in the atmosphere was emitting infrared light, which was recorded by satellites, and there's a perfect circle floating over the epicenter, through the epicenter of Fukushima during the time of the event. So that is the result of what everyone has discussed as being the HARP-induced low-frequency sound at 1.75 hertz, and that, you know, we have now not only the measurements from the instruments that these sounds were being generated, but we also have the plasma circle in the sky that's being formed, which basically forms a reflective crystalline. Plasma has crystalline structures. So when you focus something like HARP beam, or from the sea-based X-band radar, a beam of energy like that, it's heating up and causing the plasma, and then further energy that is reflected off that plasma down to the surface of the planet below to target an area.
Yep.
So those measurements together really show that these are being used in conjunction with Elenin alignments and things like that to focus energy. And certainly we can watch out for weather war in the future that, you know, let the next two alignments with Elenin, we're going to look for, you know, those events in September and November. But the next RAD system is actually a low-frequency sound system of emitters that are not pointing together to any specific area, but they're radiating the area around them with low-frequency sound, which is causing these extreme tornadoes, which we've been seeing in the U.S. that are certainly unprecedented in history in any other part of the world as well to this day.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, we're going to talk a little bit more about the radiation situation in Fukushima. I think we should dive into that in the second hour here. But let's just kind of, before we wrap things up, for the first, talk about the two. There's two more news items I'd like to run through. One of them is the aerial HHO plasma beams over Xiamen in China. And then also we have the Vimana drones, a little boy basically in Japan. I don't know if he found small UFOs, but you have some interesting stuff there on the Vimana drones, that there is a standing waves depicted on that. Let's talk about these two items, Alex, before we round things up at the first hour.
Yeah, they definitely fit in well. The Xiamen auroral plumes definitely blew me away when I saw them, because they're very high altitude, unlike the ones in Longview, Texas, which were very close to the ground. These high altitude ones had a very interesting spacing. They have a distribution. They almost look like vertical beams that are in a kind of grid pattern, but it's not a linear grid. And that fascinated me, because that directly suggests that we're looking at an acoustic, nonlinear acoustic pattern generating nodal points where these plasmas are forming. But it's the same exact process that happens with the normal auroras, which tend to happen at higher latitudes and lower latitudes. But this effect is, to me, an indicator of what we'll be seeing with the high atmospheric changes going on right now in the 2012 event. Will probably bring this type of glowing hot spots or focal points, or even concentric circles of glowing energy into our atmosphere, and that it will involve the dissociation of water vapor into hydrogen and oxygen, at which point the oxygen or the hydrogen compresses and implodes down to 1/4 of its normal size, and in that process gives off the light that we see as aurora. So I think this is the sky activating or kind of bleeding through from what, you know, some of the energetic levels that we'll be seeing in the future all over the whole entire atmosphere.
And then, of course, we have, or is there something else you want to mention about that specific event? I mean, again, that photo, is that the real deal there that you have on the website? It links through to another website, of course, as well. Is that a real photo of that event?
Yes, it was.
That's pretty interesting. It looks very, very interesting indeed. We have a lot of things happening in over China and then in Asia overall. Let's talk briefly then about the Vimana, the standing wave formation depicted on this Vimana, Alex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really excited to see that. I had not heard of that case, and it obviously has now been brought to the world's attention, although it occurred in the mid-70s. But it was involving high school kids who literally got curious about this object. They kept seeing over a field, and one day, lo and behold, they saw it sitting on the ground. And apparently they had seen it flying around silently and glowing earlier in their experience. So as I read that story, I was really blown away, because when you look at this object and you read the descriptions of it, this matches exactly what I've been discussing and have quoted in my book, Lightwater, regarding other contactees with information that they have as far as how these metal achieve such an extreme hardness, which, for example, these high school kids were trying to, you know, beat the heck out of this UFO. They took it home in their backpack. It's like almost a story like at a, you know, Hollywood Spielberg.
Right.
And so they basically describe the features of that. It has a plasma, that it glows, you know, when it's flying around. It has anti-gravity, there's no sound. And of course, on the bottom of this object, you have concentric circles, which I've been showing create standing waves throughout my website. And these concentric rings on the bottom of the small, what might be a probe, a remote viewing device, in the center of them, there's a set of holes, 31 holes, which is interestingly enough a prime number. And then below them and around them, there are symbols which look like birds or flowers, and then a very, very specific set of archways, standing archways, which many people would look at and think of clouds or rainbows because they're concentric lines, which obviously clouds would be drawn with single lines. But it struck me immediately as matching what I've been able to translate as symbols used in the ancient Hopi artifacts for standing waves, symbols used in ancient Celtic artifacts, on artifacts from the Ife cultures of Nigeria and Africa, as well from the Mayan material, from China, all these places that I'm describing artifacts in my book, ancient Atlantean artifacts is my conclusion. This standing wave pattern is continually seen, and here we have it on these vimana, which is why I use that name, because the artifacts themselves have Sanskrit symbols on them. These standing wave symbols are tied directly in my work with ancient Sanskrit knowledge of anti-gravity, and which is why certain hotspots were used in ancient times to build these structures, and why we continually see the cultures that have preserved the Sanskrit knowledge living in those hotspots maintain these same symbols of standing waves. So seeing them on this artifact was really amazing because it confirms on so many more levels the research I've been doing, and of course I had to post it to the website upon seeing that. The article itself is full of things which I can't go into now, which are fascinating. I would encourage everyone to go have a read of the whole thing. It's very long, but scientists were able to study this object, and it's a very, very strong case.
In short, do you know where it is currently, the object?
It actually disappeared on them. It appears, in my opinion anyway, they would maintain it inside a bag, inside a backpack, or they take it and put it inside their refrigerator or whatever so that it wouldn't be able to fly away on them. And then it would disappear out of these containers during some time when they were not paying attention to it. So my perception is that this is an object that was designed by master builders with an advanced technology who have underground bases on the earth that may be connected in some way with the Sanskrit ancient Atlantean culture, and that these beings are providing purposefully this object on the ground so it can be inspected by these children. And then they're basically carrying around a recording device. And at any moment, this device has such technology that it can be made to translocate or from remotely be teleported by these advanced technologies that beings are employing. And so for that reason, they figured at any moment they could pull the object, and they just did it when they decided to stop recording these kids. So it's a there's a lot of speculation there on my part, but it ties in with so much of the other information that we're seeing around the world regarding underground civilizations, that this is a kind of monitoring device, which, looking at where the world is going right now and where it's been, certainly underground civilizations have been monitoring radioactivity levels since 1940s. So it's a very interesting case.
It's like they're on their little recon mission there. It's like something out of Batteries Not Included. Funny, I just rewatched that not too long ago. But in any regard, Alex, humanresonance.org is your website. And as we've been talking about here, lots of material for everyone interested to dive into and to digest. Something you want to mention about the website or some of the other material, your books, Alex, before we wrap things up for the first hour then?
Yeah, definitely. I do offer other titles, and people can visit my PDF page from the main link on my website. I'm presenting the books, and we've talked about them in the previous interviews in more detail and quoted from them extensively. I've just released a new book, which I want to invite everyone to read. It's free as well as all of my other ones, so you can download it as a PDF. It's about 150 pages or so, and it is mostly, there's some new text, but it's mostly a fully detailed photo survey of the Lamana Ecuador collection of artifacts. And I present that in my first book. In the last two chapters, I discuss the artifacts and the water found here as well, and the resonant characteristics of the water. And in my latest book, I reiterate that information and include it from the last two chapters of my first book, Phi. And in this latest book, it's called The Kundalini in Ecuador. And it's primarily a photo survey, but in it you'll find fantastic, high-quality images of artifacts that have never seen the world has never seen, which extensively demonstrate this pattern work of mandalas and standing waves throughout several of the artifacts, as well as helmets that are designed for psychoacoustic use to affect the brain waves of the user, and artifacts that are ceramic pieces that are scale sculptures of figures using those psychoacoustic instruments in their practices. And of course, they're all barefoot, and they were drinking water that contains gold and silver in it that's been found at the site. So that book should be a great piece for people to look and see the cymatic images that ancient cultures were drawing on to reproduce these mandala representations throughout their artwork, and to really clue us in to the sacred nature of the energies moving around these sacred sites. Once again, I invite everyone to check out those titles, and I would love comments. I do get a good flow of emails from people, and a lot of people probably assume that I wouldn't answer, but I've been happy enough to not have such a crazy flow that I can't answer. So it's great to be in communication with people and invite people now that we have space here in La Mana as well. So we're developing here still, but certainly the water is available if anyone wants to come and visit and have a chat.
All right, excellent. Humanresonance.org. Contact Alex, or obviously click in through the PDF section there and take a look at some of the books, some of the works there. Stay with us, Alex, and we'll continue with more in a little bit. In the second hour, we begin to discuss resonant standing waves in the solar corona, M-class flares, X-class flares, and human behavior as geomagnetic storms and solar radiation increases. We move on to discuss earthquakes, Japan, Fukushima, and radiation, and obviously what you can do about the radiation. And this pertains to psychokinetic abatement of radiation. In other words, mind over matter, very interesting aspect. We also discuss some more of Alex's collection of contact stories from around the world and discuss cleansing, detoxification, and compare the experiences to Troy Herdeby's God Light or Angel Light device. This is about plasma cleansing, very interesting. Don't miss this second hour or any of our previous programs. Subscribe to redicecreations.com and get access to the members area. We have a year of radio for you to enjoy for free. All our latest programs, stream or download from the website. When you're ready for more and want to tune in to the second hour of our program, consider trying out a 3-month subscription. It's only €5 per month. And by the way, that's about €4 less than a beer in Djibouti, the least livable country, according to the United Nations in 2006. Next up on Red Ice Radio, we have John Irvin, John Coleman, Nick Redfern, Robert Bouval, Hugh Newman, Penny Pierce, Kevin Annette, Will Hart, Ken Thomas, Marsha Schaefer, Bob Dean, and Rosalind Peterson, to mention a few. Keep listening to Red Ice Radio. Right now, for our members, we continue with our second hour with Alex Putney. Thank you for staying with us.